Welcome to It's Pretty Personal, a podcast all about sharing South Asian stories. Hi, welcome to season three. To kick off the season, I'm joined by Sandeep Singh Botpray, also known as King Sunny B, who is an American Sikh who identifies with the LGBTQ plus community. He is a model and influencer, as well as a healthcare administrator for a LGBTQ plus transgender program, where he works on leading the center and meet goals of the organization. He is passionate about normalizing homosexuality within the South Asian community. And this episode, we talk about Sunny's story around coming out. And honestly, it is really raw and vulnerable. If you want to find out more about Sunny, then I've added his social media links down below in the episode description. And speaking to Sunny, I realized that it can be really difficult to come out, especially in our community. So I've added some amazing social media pages in the episode description as well that highlight the intersectionality between being South Asian and identifying with the LGBTQ plus community. Whilst you're here, don't forget to follow me on social media too, Instagram, TikTok and Twitter at Pretty Personal. So if you love listening to this episode as well, don't forget to write a review, give it a rating. You can do that on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and probably wherever you listen to your podcast. So without further ado, let's get into this episode. Hi, Sunny. How are you?
Hi. How are you? I'm good.
I'm loving your energy right now. I'm like, yes, I'm living for it. Because it's like so gloomy outside here today in London. And I was like, I need this energy.
It's actually kind of gloomy here too, but it's hot. You know that weather when it's like gloomy outside, but it's like a little humid?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I had the fan on because, you know, a bitch be sweating.
Thank you so much for being a guest on my podcast. For people that don't know, Sunny, or King Sunny B, is an American Sikh who identifies himself with the LGBTQ community. And that's what today's episode is all about. It's about us learning more about the LGBTQ community, because I feel like growing up in South Asian culture is definitely, in quote unquote, taboo. And not many people know about it. And also, I feel like we're not taught about it either. And I think a lot of our research comes from us, around our peers. And honestly, I wish that growing up, I was taught more about it. So I think the first question that I kind of wanted to ask is more just, how do you identify yourself?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me on your podcast. We met, like, I think, like, via social media, and it was, like, totally awesome. I think I met you on Clubhouse.
Yes, it was Clubhouse.
Clubhouse has been doing, like, amazing things for me. Like, the opportunity is crazy. But anyways, to answer your question, I identify as a cisgender gay man. And what that basically means is I'm only attracted to other men and I'm cis. So, like, for example, like, you're a cisgender straight woman. And yeah, so that's my identity.
So just to, like, put it into, like, context for me, I know that people identify themselves as queer, and then there's some people that identify themselves within the LGBTQ community or QIA plus community. I just wanted to know, like, is there a correct term or not?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And this is something that's, like, very sensitive. So it's definitely important to understand the terminology. So it really depends on who you're speaking to. So I can't really, like, give you, like, a definitive answer, but it goes case by case because everyone's gender identity and gender expression is quite different. Some people's sexual orientation is different from their gender identity. So it's just about, like, the person. But anyways, what I would say is, like, I love to identify myself as a queer person because I feel like queer is, like, an umbrella term. And I feel like it encompasses, like, all gender identities and expressions under that umbrella. So I've started actually just saying more so, like, I'm a queer person or a queer person of experience. And it also takes away from, like, that whole stigma associated to, like, being quote unquote gay in the South Asian community. I feel like when you stay queer, it starts conversations and people are like, what do you mean by that? Aren't you just gay? And it's just like, no, because I feel like in the South Asian community, people really, like, over-sexualize when people say that they're gay. And a lot of the times, a lot of gay people are, like, asexual. So it's just like, you can't just assume that every person within the community is, like, promiscuous, because that's a misconception. If we go down the spectrum, L is basically for a lesbian, and that's someone that's a female who's attracted to another female. G is gay, and that's a male who's attracted to another male. And B is bisexual, and that's someone that's attracted to both genders, the opposite and the same. And T is a person who identifies as trans, a transgender person of experience, and normally their gender identity differs from their sex assigned at birth. There's trans feminine people, there's trans masculine people, and there's like non-binary, there's binary. So there's a large spectrum of that as well. And then there's also like subgroups within that, that, you know, sometimes it can get a little bit confusing, but as long as you ask the right questions and, you know, you should always start off anytime talking to a queer person, no matter what they identify with within the spectrum, you should always ask somebody what their pronouns are. I think that really simplifies a lot of what your questions are going to be, because once you start asking someone's pronouns, you know how to address them. And then you kind of get a feel of like, what might their gender identity be? So that's like a little tidbit. And then I is a person that identifies as intersex, whose sexual anatomy or chromosomes do not fit with the traditional markers of female and male. And A can be for ally and for someone that's asexual. And an ally is someone that's non-queer. For example, someone like you, yourself, I would consider you as an ally, someone that's supportive of the LGBTQ community, someone that will advocate for the community, even though they don't live that community's truth, but they understand the misconceptions and they're able to advocate and voice for that community and that vulnerable population. So A can also be for asexual, a person who generally does not feel sexually desired or attracted to any one group or person. It's very different from saying someone is celibate or celibacy. It's not the same thing. It's literally someone that doesn't feel any attraction to anyone. And pansexual is basically a person who experiences sexual, romantic, physical, and or spiritual attraction of all gender identities. To them, it doesn't matter what's between your legs. It matters like what's in your heart. They go by like feeling and spirituality and like basically like who that person is. I have a lot of friends that identify with pansexual. And in the beginning, I didn't really quite understand because, you know, you always feel like you have to like, oh, well, like, how are you only attracted to someone's like spirituality or personality? But when you meet someone that's pansexual and you kind of understand how they are as a person, it really starts to make sense that literally these people really are so like deep thinkers that that's really what stimulates them and what attracts them to another person. So that's basically like the spectrum. I mean, the acronym is definitely growing. You know, it was LGB, then LGBT, then LGBTQ. Now it's LGBTQIA+. So there's definitely, I feel like, gender identities that are going to like continually be added onto the spectrum as time goes on, as we explore and evolve as queer people. But for right now, that's the acronym. And that's basically what each letter stands for.
That's so helpful. Thank you so much for breaking that down, because I think a lot of people don't know. And I think a lot of people just kind of say it and then don't know what each of them mean. So that's so much value. And I really, really appreciate you saying that. But I do also want to jump into a bit more about your story. Like, you identify as an American Sikh person. And obviously, we're both Sikh. And I feel like, as much as Sikhi talks about everyone being equal and religion is very personal, so for me, that is the fundamental principle, is you treat everybody the same. You do not discriminate against people. Yet Punjabi culture, and I want to preface this, as religion and culture are two completely different things. And I think a lot of times we get them mixed up. And I think within Punjabi culture or South Asian culture, being queer is kind of seen as a taboo thing. Growing up, there wasn't that many people out there that were openly queer and South Asian. I'm assuming that coming out was obviously a lot harder when you didn't have role models of people like you that were out. How did you know that you were a gay man?
Yeah, thanks for that question. And I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. You know, growing up, I thought that I was like this weirdo. I can even go back to like maybe like 4 or 5 years old. I remember I used to watch the show Blue's Clues on TV.
I loved Blue's Clues.
Yeah, I remember I used to watch the show on TV. My mom would always like put it on in the morning while she would make me like breakfast. And, you know, Steven would take out like his handy dandy notebook and like he would start scribbling on his notebook and stuff. I was like, oh my God, he's like so cute. Like, he's so fine. Like, in my head, I literally can recall remembering that and thinking like, wait, that's like, am I supposed to be thinking that way? Is that norm? I didn't have the right words and verbiage to kind of justify what I was feeling or like to put it into terminology. I was so young. And I remember like I would go up to the TV screen and I would like kiss the screen because I was like, oh my God, he's like so cute, whatever. And you know, that's like one thing that I really remember very definitively. But as I got older, life hasn't been like a bed of roses. You know, unfortunately, I've had to go through a lot of like bullying and harassment, and I've had to deal with a lot of stigma and isolation, misconceptions. As a queer person that has like a South Asian identity, we sometimes suffer from coming out over and over again. We have to continuously advocate for ourselves and kind of convince people that this is who we are. And it's very like taxing. So basically, I kind of knew for a long time from when I was a young child. It wasn't really until I went to school that like people would tell me that you're gay, or like, you know, they would say the F word to me or whatever. They're like, oh, but you're gay, like you're a gay lord. But they would say it in a way that it was like negative. Like there's like negative connotations attached to it. And in my head, I would be like, why are you telling me who I am? Like, I don't even know who I am right now. You know what I mean? And so I did date girls early on. That was like a different person. I was being forced to do something because I had to fit a societal norm, and realizing that that's not my happiness. That's not what I want to do. That in itself was like very difficult to kind of navigate. And, you know, like you said, growing up, I had no one to look up to. There was no one in the South Asian community that was queer, that was out, that was living their truth, that maybe was married to a partner and had children and had a great career and living like that American dream. I didn't have any of that to look up to. And I don't think like even my own family, they didn't even have anyone for me to kind of like relate to, because for them, I was like the first queer person in their life. And I was like this person that was like, you know, creating all this ruckus and chaos in everyone's life around me, but basically kind of letting them know that like, you need to educate yourself and understand what it means. Like having a friend, a son, a grandson, a nephew who identifies this way, like it's now your responsibility to educate yourself. And I literally think when people say, well, I didn't know, or I have no idea, like, no. At a certain point in life, people have to be held accountable, because you can't always say that. Like in the times that we live in right now with racism and Asian American hate, if we don't go out and educate ourselves and understand what's happening in the real world, then we're the ones that are acting ignorant. Because at some point we have to take accountability and ownership and teach ourselves. Learning about the LGBTQ community, learning about the Stonewall history, learning about people like Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, who were like the pioneers and trailblazers, and reasons why gay men like me can even exist are because of trans women like them. And trans people are the ones now that are like being put in a vulnerable position, and they're the ones that are being targeted even by the LGBTQ community. And these people don't realize that at one point you yourself were vulnerable. Do you know that in 2021, already 12 trans women of color have been murdered in America? And it is not discussed on global media.
No, it isn't.
A trans woman of color, her life expectancy is 35. 35 years old. That is her life expectancy. And I run two transgender programs in New York City. So I see firsthand what these individuals are facing, whether that's like insurance, access to healthcare, top or bottom surgery. People don't realize that a lot of times it's really hard for trans people to find employment. The LGBTQ community is making massive strides and has come a long way from like 10 years ago, but there is still so much work to be done. There is still so much education that needs to be given and facilitated, because even like, for example, like my platform, I utilize my platform to advocate for, because I think that if I don't do it, I don't see anyone else doing it. And I hope that I inspire and motivate other queer people to also do the same thing, to come out of the closet, to live their authentic self, to fight the good fight, and to literally make changes in their local communities so they can learn to change the narrative, enable that change, and also help those people advocate for members like us so we can create this movement, because it's so necessary in the South Asian community. And I feel that if other people don't do it, it's never going to happen. And I don't want a younger person going through similar things that I went through. Like I want someone to be able to go to the King Sunny B platform and be like, oh my God, like look at this intersectionality of Sikhism and queerism. Like, it can happen. This person is doing it. I can do it too. And that's the point and purpose of my platform. And that's what I try to fight for, to normalize homosexuality within our community.
I love that. So I was like nodding along. I was like, yeah, because I think it's very true. Like what you said, that change starts at home. And I was doing so much research around Sikh people who are also gay and how they identify and the reservations they had coming out. And I kind of wanted to ask you, like, for your story, for your coming out, what were some of the reservations that you had when you had to tell your family?
So I don't know if I shared this, but I'm born to two Gursikh parents. And I don't know if a lot of people know what that means, but my mom and my dad are both Amritdhari and they're indulged in Sikhi. So my mother and my father, they both were married prior. And my mother lost her husband to a stroke. And my father lost his wife to the attacks in 1984. She was actually murdered in the 1984 attacks. And so later on in life, my grandparents arranged my parents to get married. They both each had one child. My dad already had a daughter. My mom already had a son. And so they had this blended family. My mom has been in America for many, many, many years. And so she brought over my dad and my sister. And then they had me. Growing up, I never really knew the true story about our family. It wasn't until later on when I got a little bit older that I was told that this is like the story. Sometimes it makes you feel that like two people had to die for you to be born in a way. Like, you know, that's a little bit of a difficult pill to swallow sometimes. I definitely understand that there's a purpose for me to be here. And so with that being said, telling my mom and my, well, first it was my mom because my father actually had walked out on us. So my mom became a single mother and she raised me all on her own, put me through college. I worked and I helped her too. I got scholarships and all this good stuff. But someone that has kind of sacrificed so much of her life to make sure that my life turns out amazing, telling her something like that, I didn't want to disappoint her. And I thought that I was going to disappoint her. I'm sorry. Sometimes it's still like really difficult. Like when I think about it, it's something that I had to carry for a long time. And I was like really scared to kind of like tell my mom and share like this personal thing about me with my mom. But it was important. I had to do it. I needed to break that cord and tell her. I think the biggest hurdle was telling my mother. I wasn't really scared to tell anybody else, honestly. Like a lot of my cousins had already known before my mom. They were like super supportive. My brother kind of already had an idea before my mom. So it was basically like telling my mom. And the way that it kind of happened wasn't like the best way. I kind of regret the way that I told her because it came out in frustration and anger, something that I was holding on to for so long. But my mom is a true soldier of Sikhi. She's definitely someone that really understands the true teachings of Sikhi. And she's used certain of those quotes to kind of bring solace to me, to help me understand that Vaiguru making me this way and creating me this way, like there's nothing wrong with that. And it's definitely been a journey for my mom too. It was not easy for her. I would be lying to you. But if there's younger queer kids that listen to this podcast, I just want them to know if it happened for me, it's going to happen for you too. I'm sorry. Like I get like emotional, like it's something that I'm still working through. I'm in therapy. So
I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. I'm literally here. Like, I really want to give you a hug.
I just want people to know that like if my mom, who is going to be 70 years old this year, and she is a Gursikh and Amritdhari and she does Pat all the time, and we have a Babaji in our house, and my mom has raised me with Sikh values and Sikh principles, and she always tells me to do Pat and pray to Vaiguru and do Japji Sahib and Ardas. Like, that's my mom. And if my mom can really understand that Sikhi is about equality and about loving one another and about accepting each other, and it's about fighting for those people that can't fight for themselves, that's what my mom has taught me. For a long time, I thought that I wasn't going to make it to 29. When you are queer and you're going through all these traumas, your mental health is really, really affected. And that's another thing that we don't talk about in the South Asian community, nor do we believe in mental health. And we just suppress until one day, like, we blow up. And then people are like, oh my God, he's going crazy. He's gone angry. He's become a madman. But people don't realize that if you don't work on healing those traumas, there is no way that you can be a parent to your child. That's all going to trickle on. It's all going to be a domino effect. And so I really want people to understand that. I really hope that, you know, a lot of people that are having children, it's very important to know prior to even becoming a parent that you have to know that if your child turns out to be queer, you have to be okay with that. You can't just like go plan a family and then your child ends up telling you later on that they're queer and you're like, what? Like, no, prior to even becoming a parent, like even for us, like if my child turns out to be straight, oh, great. You turn out to be gay, great. It shouldn't matter. Even like these gender reveals, like we're already assigning gender to a baby who's not even here yet. Oh, it's a boy, it's a girl. But you don't know what that baby is going to want to be when they come into this world. So why are we assigning gender? Why are we already creating these gender norms prior to that baby even coming into the world?
Thank you so much for sharing your story. Like, I know that wasn't easy for you. Hats off to your mom for doing that. But also your journey is so inspirational. And the fact that you're using your platform to help other people is honestly like so inspiring. So I just want to say thank you. Homophobia is something that unfortunately is a massive thing within the world. I don't know why it is, but I feel like, for example, you said this before at the start of the podcast, like the words "that's so gay" have had very negative connotations to it. And it's been thrown around so commercially these days, like, oh, that's so gay as a phrase, but you're not realizing that you're literally marginalizing a whole community by saying that. So I just wanted to know like how you've dealt with homophobia growing up and even now, to be honest.
I refuse to deal with it. So when I first started the platform, I started the platform because I was on Instagram and I was like, yo, there is like nobody on this digital space that resonates with me. There's sick models, there's sick influencers, and they're doing amazing stuff. And then there's LGBTQ people of various different ethnicities doing amazing, cool stuff. But there was no intersectionality of the two. But when I created the platform, I created it because I wanted to bring visibility and awareness to something that was not there. And this was about like maybe 4.5 years ago. And now the massive amount of queer sicks that are on Instagram, like I would like to take some credit for that because I really truly feel that besides Lily Singh, who also came out much later on in life, once she reached a certain status in Hollywood, that's when she decided to come out. But other than that, there is nobody. Now there's a lot of people. I'm happy to see the amount of queer sicks that are coming out and that are creating a platform and that are trying to make noise and change the narrative because we need it. It cannot just be Sunny. It needs to be more. We need to create a whole movement. In the beginning, when I used to get these homophobic rants and I used to get like these crazy DMs and people would want to tell me that like they want to kill me and this, that, whatever, I used to take it very, very, very serious and personal. I used to like shut down. I used to like go back and delete the post I posted. I used to like change my thing back to like being private from public. Like I really used to get affected by it. And then my older brother told me that allowing these people to infiltrate my mind because of the work that I'm doing is basically proving to them that they're right and I'm wrong. And it's giving them more power. It's allowing them to have more power over me when I know that the work that I'm doing is going to resonate with a young Sunny. Another thing that I learned from another powerhouse, Jyoti K, who is one of my inspirations. And she's basically the reason why the King Sunny B platform has amplified. It was because of me working with her. And she brought me to another level. One thing that she taught me is like, you call them out.
Do you know what? That is such a boss thing to do. Because I think it's so true. I feel as though like everyone these days are like keyboard warriors.
Yeah. And honestly, Preeti, if you go onto my Instagram and you go to like my followers, I have a lot of people that follow me that have like no Instagram profile picture. They have like no followers. Sometimes I feel like they're bots, but then they're literally viewing my stories over and over again. I'm like, is this someone that like is like a hater? Or is this someone that like actually supports it or whatever?
I think education, I think, is so, so important in so many different ways, like raising awareness, educating yourself. I think a lot of people don't want to be educated, which is a massive problem. And I think, for example, there's a lot of internalized prejudice against the queer community.
Right.
I feel like some people are aware of it and they don't want to do anything about it, but there's some people that are not aware of it because that's all they know. They don't want to question it. And I would like to believe that there are a lot of people out there that want to undo that internal prejudice. So I just want to know, in your opinion, how can people be an ally?
You have a lot of faith in humanity.
I would like to believe that humanity is good.
Listen, it doesn't take a lot to be an ally. It really doesn't. It takes some conversation, some understanding, maybe some research, maybe some unconventional talks. Like, a lot of my close friends are girlfriends, and it's been difficult to be a cisgender, straight Punjabi girl's best friend and be like the gay guy friend, the gay guy best friend. You know what I mean? It started creating conversations in their households, and it started creating conversations with their in-laws and with their other family friends. Like, what is this? Like, what is going on here? Why are you always with this kid? You know, they always want to link if a boy and a girl are hanging out that they're like together, which is so stupid.
I get it. Like, trust me, I feel like people don't understand what the word platonic means, because I was on a bhangra team. So a lot of my friends end up being guys. And everyone's like, so when you have a Geordie, everyone's like, oh my God, you're dating a Geordie. I'm like, no, I see them as a brother. Like, nah, not like that.
Yeah, exactly. And like, it's so funny. Like, one of my really, really good best friends, like, people literally thought that me and her were together. And I was like, oh my God, like, she's my sister, literally. But I just take a lot from like my friends, because we've been friends for such a long time. They've been able to sit down with me. They've been able to understand where I've come from, what I've been through. And they've been able to advocate for that in their own little communities, in their own little circles. And they've been able to normalize it, you know? My best friend is getting married in July, and I'm in her bridal party. Same thing with my other best friend who got married like in the August of 2019. I was in her bridal party. And you know how much conversation and eyes and people are like, what the hell is going on? Like, it was so odd to people. But that in itself shows you they're being an ally. They're understanding my identity. They're understanding the way I want to express myself. And they know by lumping me up with like the guys, Sunny's not going to be okay with that. And that's what an ally is. Someone that really understands and then tries to implement that understanding in their real life and their day-to-day life. And basically bring other people onto that journey. Because the only way that is going to resonate is if other people also follow along when you're leading as an ally.
That's really great advice, actually. Like, thank you for that. Because I think a lot of times, like, people do have friends that are different races, but a lot of people don't have friends that are different sexual orientations. And I think people get uncomfortable when they see a person of a different sexual orientation. I don't really understand why.
Majority of South Asian men get uncomfortable. Like, literally, if I walk into a room with my friends and it's like all guys, they feel like they're going to be like sexualized because like there's a gay guy here and he's going to be like, oh my God. And that's another thing that really bothers me. Like, just because you have a thing between your legs doesn't mean that somebody wants you, bro. That's not how it works. People are always like, oh, he's gay. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, he can't like get close to me. Like, don't touch me. You know, like, and it's just like, okay, you don't touch me either. Like, I don't want you close to me either. I have more respect for South Asian or any type of man who is so comfortable in his sexuality. Like, he'll be like, yo, bro, like, your ass looks fat today. Like, you know, just so being so comfortable and normalizing it. And I have friends like that, too. I have straight friends that are so comfortable. They'll be cool with them. They're like, oh, look at that guy. He's mad cute, whatever. And it's like, there's people that can do that. But then there's people that do this, because you want to know why? It's a learned behavior. Toxic masculinity is an acquired trait in the South Asian community. It's like, the second a young boy sees an older man being that way, they like latch onto it like right away, like, you know, like a bad habit. And I think that this whole toxic masculinity really needs to be talked about. People need to be held accountable. And like, people really need to understand that they need to stop that shit. There's so many men that need to unlearn their learned behaviors because they've been conditioned to be that way. And like, if you are not going to take the stance and teach yourself and do the right thing, then bro, you're just as guilty as the next person.
What you said about learned behavior is so true, because it's that whole like stereotype. Be born, go to school, go to uni, get a socially acceptable job, get married, have kids, right? And a lot of times people do that because they don't know anything different. And when you kind of stem away from that normal path, everyone gets a bit like, what are you doing? Or what's wrong with you? This isn't normal.
But who's to say what's normal?
Exactly. This is my point.
Who's to say that like what you just described is normal? Because to me, that's not normal. I don't think it's normal going through all these stages of your life, getting married to someone, having kids when you yourself are like not all the way there.
When we say that traditional path, I feel that a lot of it is because South Asian culture is very patriarchal and it's very benefits the man. I want to say as much as things are changing, and I'm very glad that things are changing, especially in our generation where we are a lot more open-minded. You don't want to be living the same story as someone else's. And this is what I'm so passionate about. It's like everyone has a story and everyone's story is so unique. There's no one else like you out there in the world. That's just you. There's nobody else like you. So you should really own your story and be different. I think growing up, everyone's kind of been told that being different is weird because we just want to conform and fit in. But no, that's the one thing I love about you, Sunny, is the fact that you're so comfortable in who you are right now. You are so passionate about it because I can tell that it's a lot of like trauma that you've gone through and you don't want that on anyone else. And I can see that. And it's very similar to how I feel about female and female equality because I've gone through that. And I just want to know that in hindsight, your story is so incredible. Do you wish that you did anything differently?
My God, that's a really good question. You want to know something really interesting? I mean, since you asked me that question. So I've been in therapy and like, thank you so much for saying those kind words, but it's been a work in progress. I'm still a work in progress. I'm getting there slowly, but surely. But it's definitely taken a long time to get comfortable with who I am as a person and, you know, really associating the work that I do in my career. It really identifies with who I am as a person. And when I'm able to help other people, like I'm so much of a giver, it like makes me feel good. And my therapist has told me like, yeah, but you need to learn how to give to yourself. So that's something that I'm like learning to do because I don't know how to do that. But are there any regrets? Like, I don't know if there's any regrets that I have with anything that I've done. Maybe like some like clothing choices and some photo shoots. But actually, like my therapist yesterday told me, she was like, we all have a journey. And sometimes we're always like, why me? Why did this happen to me? Like, why am I struggling? Why am I suffering? Why am I dealing with this? And she basically told me, we have to own our journey and we have to be thankful for the journey that we've had. Because she told me that once we take ownership of our journey, it kind of stops us from questioning why. It stops us questioning, God, why did you do this to me? Why am I this way? And I found that to be so powerful and profound because for so long, I'm always like, yo, like, F you, F this, like, why all this shit happened to me? Why did I have to go through this, blah, blah, blah. And like, after yesterday, when she told me that, like, my mind just started working differently. Like, I've been through some things. I really have. You know, there's some really deep-rooted traumas that I've been through that I don't feel comfortable to share. But I think when you slowly take ownership and be like, that's a part of who I am and that's a part of my story, I think you're able to deliver that message very differently in comparison to someone that isn't able to own their story and own their journey. You know, I'm proud of what I've been through. I'm proud of the obstacles and the hurdles because I wouldn't be here today, the person that I am with the platform that I have and the career that I have, if I didn't go through all of that stuff. I'm starting to learn to love myself. I'm starting to learn to love my flaws I'm starting to love the traumas. And that's very difficult because life hasn't been the best to me. But it's like my decision now to make my life the way I want it to be. There's no one dictating and telling me that this is what you have to do. I think for so long, our parents kind of like condition us and kind of like, you know, they dictate like, you know, where we're going to go and what we're going to do and how much money we're going to get and this, that, whatever. And when you get to a certain point in life, that stops because you're now running your own life and you're making your own decisions as an adult and you choose who you want around you. You choose who you want to associate with and you choose how you want to do your day to day and how that's going to be beneficial for your mental health, for your physical health, for your spiritualness, you know, and all of that stuff. And I think that, you know, I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of young children watching this who might not be at that point in their life where they're able to basically understand or live what I'm describing. But at the same time, just know that it gets better. It does get better. I promise you, days will get better. You will get out of that darkness. There is light at the end of the tunnel. And just like, don't lose hope. If anyone ever needs anything or needs any resources, I work in LGBTQ healthcare in New York City, but I can connect you with people in the UK, wherever you're from, wherever you're watching and listening this podcast. So like definitely utilize me as a resource. Direct message me. If I don't get back to you, comment on my picture or something to get my attention. And I promise you, like, I will get you guys whatever you need. Like, I just want like the youth and like younger queer kids to just be happy, beautiful babies and just flourish, like become those butterflies that you all are capable of. And it breaks my heart so much when I read stories that a young queer person has taken their life or a young trans person has taken their life. And at one point, I was that person. I used to have those thoughts. You know, I didn't want to be here. And that comes with a lot of trauma. And so getting help, going to therapy, having some great friends around you, speaking to them, doing things that make you happy, like all of that really changes how you feel. And a lot of that happens because we feel like we're the only ones, but we're not. There's so many others like us and we just haven't met them yet. So, you know, give yourself the chance to meet those other people that are like you so you understand that you're not alone. And I really hope that message resonates with a lot of people that, you know, watch or listen to this podcast.
I love that. Thank you so much for saying that because I think people need to hear that as well. I'm like getting emotional.
I know, me too. Aww. I just want like normalize homosexuality in our community. Like I used to the butt of everyone's joke. I used to be made fun of so much. I used to like be taunted and harassed and spit on. I just like don't want anyone to like have to go through that. So like, I really hope that I can keep making changes and like be as different as possible because people like me need to exist so other children and other people can know that their existence is valid and it's needed and it's required and there's nothing wrong with them. And that's very important for people to know that, especially queer people that come from communities like we do.
Thanks, Honey B. Thank you for coming on my podcast, sharing your story. And honestly, like, educating me, educating people who are listening, and also just the amount of things that you're doing, like, it's amazing. And I'm so glad that we connected through Clubhouse and now you're here.
I know. Thank you so much for having me, for discovering me, and I discovered you. This was like totally fun. And I just hope that this goes a long way and really helps someone. And like I've said, if anyone needs anything, any resources or anything, you're more than happy to reach out to me.
Yeah, I'm going to link Sunny's stuff in the episode description so you guys can just click on it and it will take you to his page. Thank you so much, Sunny.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this and thank you so much, Sunny, for coming on and to share his story. I really hope you enjoy the episode and learn something new. Let me know your thoughts as well. So you can send me an Instagram DM at prettypersonal or email me at itsprettypersonal@gmail.com. And if you have a story, let me know, because I love listening to new stories, learning new things. So yeah, feel free to email me. But have an amazing day. I'll speak to you in the next episode, and stay tuned on my social media to see when that is. Take care. Bye.